Chapter 161. An old acquaintance is recognized under melancholy circumstances, and those boys all breaks up forever. Nicholas was one of those whose joy is incomplete, unless it is shared by the friends of adverse and less fortunate days. Surrounded by every fascination of love and hope, his warm heart yearned towards plain John Browdie. He remembered their first meeting with a smile, and their second with a tear. Saw poor Smike once again with the bundle on his shoulder trudging patiently by his side, and heard the honest Yorkshireman's rough words of encouragement as he left them on their road to London. Madeline and he sat down, very many times, jointly to produce a letter which should acquaint John at full length with his altered fortunes, and assure him of his friendship and gratitude. It so happened, however, that the letter could never be written. Although they applied themselves to it with the best intentions in the world, it chanced that they always fell to talking about something else, and when Nicholas tried it by himself, he found it impossible to write one half of what he wished to say, or to pen anything, indeed, which on reperusal did not appear cold and unsatisfactory compared with what he had in his mind. At last, after going on thus from day to day, and reproaching himself more and more, he resolved, the more readily as Madeline strongly urged him, to make a hasty trip into Yorkshire, and present himself before Mr. and Mrs. Browdie without a word of notice. Thus it was that between 7 and 8 o'clock one evening, he and Kate found themselves in the Saracen's Head booking office, securing a place to Greta Bridge by the next morning's coach. They had to go westward, to procure some little necessaries for his journey, and, as it was a fine night, they agreed to walk there, and ride home. The place they had just been in called up so many recollections, and Kate had so many anecdotes of Madeline, and Nicholas so many anecdotes of Frank, and each was so interested in what the other said, and both were so happy and confiding, and had so much to talk about, that it was not until they had plunged for a full half hour into that labyrinth of streets which lies between Seven Dials and Soho, without emerging into any large thoroughfare, that Nicholas began to think it just possible they might have lost their way. The possibility was soon converted into a certainty, for, on looking about, and walking first to one end of the street, and then to the other, he could find no landmark he could recognize, and was fain to turn back again in quest of some place at which he could seek a direction. It was a by street, and there was nobody about, or in the few wretched shops they passed. Making towards a faint gleam of light which streamed across the pavement from a cellar, Nicholas was about to descend 2 or 3 steps so as to render himself visible to those below and make his inquiry, when he was arrested by a loud noise of scolding in a woman's voice. "Oh, come away! Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Kate, "they are quarreling. You'll be hurt. Apostrophe, wait one instant, Kate. Let us hear, if there's anything the matter," apostrophe returned her brother. "Hush! Apostrophe, you nasty, idle, vicious, good-for-nothing brute," apostrophe cried the woman, stamping on the ground, "why don't you turn the mangle? Apostrophe, apostrophe, so I am, my life and soul." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," replied the man's voice. "I am always turning. I am perpetually turning, like a damned old horse in a damnition mill. My life is one damned horrid grind." "Apostrophe, then why don't you go, and list for a soldier?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," retorted the woman, "you're welcome to. Apostrophe, for a soldier." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried the man. "For a soldier? Would his joy and gladness see him in a coarse red coat with a little tail? Would she hear of his being slapped and beat by drummers demnebly? Would she have him fire off real guns, and have his hair cut, and his whiskers shaved, and his eyes turned right and left, and his trousers pipiclayed?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, dear Nicholas, apostrophe," whispered Kate, "you don't know who that is. It's Mr. Mantalini, I am confident. Apostrophe, do make sure. Peep at him, while I ask the way," apostrophe said Nicholas. "Come down a step or two. Come. apostrophe, drawing her after him, Nicholas crept down the steps and looked into a small boarded cellar. There, amidst clothes baskets and clothes, stripped up to his shirt sleeves, but wearing still an old patched pair of pantaloons of superlative make, a once brilliant waistcoat, and mustache and whiskers as of yore, but lacking their lustrous dye there, endeavoring to mollify the wrath of a buxom female not the lawful Madame Mantalini, but the proprietress of the concern and grinding meanwhile, as if for very life at the mangle, whose creaking noise, mingled with her shrill tones, appeared almost to deafen him. There was the graceful, elegant, fascinating, and once dashing Mantalini. "Oh, you false traitor!" apostrophe apostrophe cried the lady, threatening personal violence on Mr. Mantalini's face. "False! Oh, damn! Now my soul, my gentle, captivating, bewitching, and most damnably enslaving chickabiddy, be calm," apostrophe said Mr. Mantalini, humbly. "I won't!" apostrophe apostrophe screamed the woman. "I'll tear your eyes out!" apostrophe "Oh! What a damned savage lamb!" apostrophe cried Mr. Mantalini. "You're never to be trusted!" apostrophe screamed the woman. "You were out all day yesterday, and gallivanting somewhere I know. You know you were. Isn't it enough that I paid £2.14 for you, and took you out of prison, and let you live here like a gentleman, but must you go on like this? Breaking my heart besides?" apostrophe apostrophe "I will never break its heart. I will be a good boy, and never do so any more. I will never be naughty again. I beg its little pardon," apostrophe said Mr. Mantalini, dropping the handle of the mangle, and folding his palms together. "It is all up with its handsome friend. He has gone to the damnation bow-wows. It will have pity? It will not scratch and claw, but pet and comfort? Oh, damn it!" apostrophe, very little affected. To judge from her action, by this tender appeal, the lady was on the point of returning some angry reply, when Nicholas, raising his voice, asked his way to Piccadilly. Mr. Mantalini turned round, caught sight of Kate, and, without another word, leapt at one bound into a bed which stood behind the door, and drew the counterpane over his face, kicking meanwhile convulsively. "Damn it!" apostrophe he cried, in a suffocating voice, "it's little Nickleby! Shut the door, put out the candle, turn me up in the bedstead! Oh, damn, damn, damn!" apostrophe apostrophe the woman looked, first at Nicholas, and then at Mr. Mantalini, as if uncertain on whom to visit this extraordinary behavior. But Mr. Mantalini, happening by ill luck to thrust his nose from under the bedclothes, in his anxiety to ascertain whether the visitors were gone, she suddenly, and with a dexterity which could only have been acquired by long practice, flung a pretty heavy clothes basket at him, with so good an aim that he kicked more violently than before, though without venturing to make any effort to disengage his head, which was quite extinguished. Thinking this a favorable opportunity for departing before any of the torrent of her wrath discharged itself upon him, Nicholas hurried Kate off, and left the unfortunate subject of this unexpected recognition to explain his conduct as he best could. The next morning he began his journey. It was now cold, winter weather. Forcibly recalling to his mind under what circumstances he had first traveled that road, and how many vicissitudes and changes he had since undergone, he was alone inside the greater part of the way, and sometimes, when he had fallen into a doze, and, rousing himself, looked out of the window, and recognized some place which he well remembered as having passed, either on his journey down, or in the long walk back with poor Smike, he could hardly believe, but that all which had since happened had been a dream, and that they were still plodding wearily on towards London, with the world before them. To render these recollections the more vivid, it came on to snow as night set in, and, passing through Stamford and Grantham, and by the little alehouse, where he had heard the story of the bold Baron of Grogzwig, everything looked as if he had seen it but yesterday, and not even a flake of the white crust on the roofs had melted away. Encouraging the train of ideas which flocked upon him, he could almost persuade himself that he sat again outside the coach with Squeers and the boys, that he heard their voices in the air, and that he felt again, but with a mingled sensation of pain and pleasure now, that old sinking of the heart and longing after home. While he was yet yielding himself up to these fancies, he fell asleep, and, dreaming of Madeline, forgot them. He slept at the inn at Greta Bridge on the night of his arrival, and, rising at a very early hour next morning, walked to the market town, and inquired for John Browdie's house. John lived in the outskirts. Now he was a family man, and as everybody knew him, Nicholas had no difficulty in finding a boy who undertook to guide him to his residence. Dismissing his guide at the gate, and in his impatience, not even stopping to admire the thriving look of cottage or garden either, Nicholas made his way to the kitchen door, and knocked lustily with his stick. "Halloa!" cried a voice inside. "What be the matther noo? Be the toon a fire? Ding, but thou mak's noise enough." With these words, John Browdie opened the door himself, and opening his eyes to their utmost width, cried, as he clapped his hands together, and burst into a hearty roar, "Ecod, it be the Godfather, it be the Godfather! Tilly, here be Mr. Nickleby. Gaius the Hond, mun. Kumawa, Kumawa. And why un, doon beside the fire, tak a soup o' thought. Dinnit say a word till thou's drunk a day. Oop Wyatt, mun. Ding. But I'm reet glad to see thee." Adapting his action to his text, John dragged Nicholas into the kitchen, forced him down upon a huge settle beside a blazing fire, poured out from an enormous bottle about a quarter of a pint of spirits, thrust it into his hand, opened his mouth, and threw back his head as a sign to him to drink it instantly, and stood with a broad grin of welcome overspreading his great red face like a jolly giant. "I might ha knowed," said John, "that nobody but thou would ha coom why sike a knock as you. Thought was the wa thou knocked at schoolmeester's door, eh? Ha, ha, ha. But I say, what be a this aboot schoolmeester? You know it then?" said Nicholas. "They were talking aboot it, doon toon, last neet," replied John, "but neen on them seemed quite to unnerstand it, loik." After various shiftings and delays, said Nicholas, "he has been sentenced to be transported for 7 years, for being in the unlawful possession of a stolen will, and, after that, he has to suffer the consequence of a conspiracy." Cried John, "a conspiracy? Soom it in the pooter plot wa? Eh? Soom it in the gyfo line?" No, a conspiracy connected with his school. I'll explain it presently. Thoughts read. Said John, "explain it arter breakfast, not noo, for thou best hungry, and so am I, and Tilly she mun be at the bottom o' a explanations, for she says thot's the mutual confidence. Ha, ha, ha. Ecod, it's a room start, is the mutual confidence." The entrance of Mrs. Browdie, with a smart cap on, and very many apologies for their having been detected in the act of breakfasting in the kitchen, stopped John in his discussion of this grave subject, and hastened the breakfast, which, being composed of vast mounds of toast, new-laid eggs, boiled ham, Yorkshire pie, and other cold substantials, of which heavy relays were constantly appearing from another kitchen under the direction of a very plump servant, was admirably adapted to the cold bleak morning, and received the utmost justice from all parties. At last, it came to a close, and the fire which had been lighted in the best parlor having by this time burned up, they adjourned thither, to hear what Nicholas had to tell. Nicholas told them all, and never was there a story which awakened so many emotions in the breasts of two eager listeners. At one time, honest John groaned in sympathy, and at another roared with joy. At one time he vowed to go up to London on purpose, to get a sight of the brothers Cheeryble, and, at another, swore that Tim Linkinwater should receive such a ham by coach, and carriage free, as mortal knife had never carved. When Nicholas began to describe Maidline, he sat with his mouth wide open, nudging Mrs. Browdie from time to time, and exclaiming under his breath, that she must be rather a tidy sort, apostrophe. And when he heard at last that his young friend had come down purposely, to communicate his good fortune, and to convey to him all those assurances of friendship which he could not state with sufficient warmth in writing, that the only object of his journey was to share his happiness with them, and to tell them that, when he was married they must come up to see him, and that Maidline insisted on it as well as he John could hold out no longer, but after looking indignantly at his wife, and demanding to know what she was whimpering for, drew his coat sleeve over his eyes and blubbered outright. "Tell you what, though," apostrophe said John seriously, when a great deal had been said on both sides, "to return to schoolmeister. If this news about un has reached school today, the old woman ween't have a whole bone in her body, nor Fanny neither. Apostrophe, oh, John. Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried Mrs. Browdie. "Ah. And oh, John the Jean," apostrophe replied the Yorkshireman. "I didn't know what they lads mightn't do. When it first got aboot that schoolmeister was in trouble, some feathers and mothers sent and took their young chaps awa. If the as is left should know what's coom tiven, there'll be psyche revolution and rebel. Ding. But I think they lay ganged aft and spill blued like waiter." Apostrophe, apostrophe, in fact, John Browdie's apprehensions were so strong that he determined to ride over to the school without delay, and invited Nicholas to accompany him, which, however, he declined, pleading that his presence might perhaps aggravate the bitterness of their adversity. "That's true," apostrophe, apostrophe said John. "I should never ha thought o' that. Apostrophe, I must return tomorrow," apostrophe said Nicholas. "But I mean to dine with you today, and if Mrs. Browdie can give me a bed, apostrophe, bed." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried John, "I wish thou couldst sleep in four beds at once. Ecod, thou shouldst have a may. Bide till I coom back, on bide till I coom back, and ecod we'll make a day of it." Apostrophe, giving his wife a hearty kiss, and Nicholas a no less hearty shake of the hand, John mounted his horse and rode off, leaving Mrs. Browdie to apply herself to hospitable preparations, and his young friend to stroll about the neighborhood and revisit spots which were rendered familiar to him by many a miserable association. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.